KALW.
Nobody who's working full-time, two jobs sometimes, should not be able to afford childcare. That just doesn't make sense.
Today, a mom shares her story about how her struggle to pay for childcare led to her family losing their home.
They always say you're one paycheck away. It's so cliche, but it's so real. You are one paycheck away from being homeless.
And how having a criminal record made it that much harder to rebuild her life.
I lost everything from that mistake. And, you know, it was 7 years ago, but I'm still paying for that same mistake.
Slipping into homelessness and trying to come back. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Last week, Governor Gavin Newsom issued an executive order for agencies throughout the state to clear homeless encampments.
We've all seen images like these throughout the Golden State, homeless encampments taking over city sidewalks and parks. Now, California's governor says he's had enough.
His order requires state agencies and departments to put into action policies for clearing camps on state-owned land. It also urges local governments to follow suit. This executive order comes right after the Supreme Court decision back in June to reverse the decision called Grants Pass versus Johnson that had protections for these camps. According to the court, it's no longer unconstitutional for cities to ban encampments, even when shelters for camp residents are unavailable. Here's what Governor Newsom said in the news release following the order.
We have now no excuse with the Supreme Court decision. This executive order is about pushing that paradigm further and getting a sense of urgency that's required of local government to do their job.
But the path to both entering and emerging from homelessness is far from simple. Today, we'll go back to a 2022 story from our partners at BayVac Media about a woman who went down the spiral of homelessness and has been working to prevent others from spiraling ever since. Here's reporter Lisa Rudman.
It's a windy Sunday in Antioch, California, about an hour east of San Francisco. During a community celebration, there's music, food, and information booths. There's an outreach table with members of a parents' advocacy group.
Excuse me, are you guys Antioch residents? Would you like to fill out a survey? It only takes a minute. You also get a free start.
They're out here today conducting surveys about housing issues.
Just talking about your housing experience in Antioch, and because we take these opinions, which will be anonymous, to the city council.
It's not easy to get people to stop, so a couple of the moms are role-playing and keeping it light.
Today we're having you guys fill out a survey so that you can get your voices heard about housing in Antioch. Do you have a minute? It will only take a minute.
Because we got 20 questions.
Volunteering with the parents group is Rochelle Pierre.
I'm a Black woman and a mother. So my son is 8 years old. He is super amazing, a lot of energy, a very fast reader. I'm very proud about that. He has a little social group, and today we're going to go to one of his friend's house to play in their pool.
Her son is named Jaden. You'll hear him in the background of our recordings. Rochelle was born in San Francisco and lived there for decades. But with sky-high rents, she's been priced out of the city. She moved 50 miles east of San Francisco to Antioch. In addition to her paid job, she volunteers and advocates for parks, housing, and childcare for families.
I became an advocate. I started working for First Five and volunteering and going up to Sacramento and talking to our local politicians and saying, you know, we need to increase the threshold for what a working person should receive when they are trying to get childcare. Nobody who's working full-time, two jobs sometimes, should not be able to afford childcare. That just doesn't make sense.
Rochelle understands these policy issues personally.
It was kind of a desperate place because I had to work or we would be homeless, right? But I could not afford the childcare.
I'm Lisa Rudman, and today Rochelle Pierre shares her story about survival, a criminal legal system, and a long climb home. Let's start back in 2006 when Rochelle earns her master's degree in social work from San Francisco State University. It's a career she's dreamed of, but it doesn't pay much. She remembers her professor saying, "You better find a high-paying job to feed your social work habit."
Before I had my son, I worked two full-time jobs. And worked round the clock. I worked overnight with disabled adults, and I was a live-in, so I could sleep there. And I worked by day, a full-time 8-hour-a-day job as a clinician. And so I was able to afford my rent and all my bills and everything as a single person. You know, it's crazy. You have to work two jobs to pay the bills. And be in a place where you do have that cushion if your car breaks down or if you need some tires or whatever.
While she was working toward becoming licensed in the clinical field, Rochelle gave birth to her son.
But of course, having my son, I had to quit the overnight job because my overnight job is taking care of my son. You know, and I had got to that place where with the only one job, I did not have any wiggle room at all. And of course, none to even pay for childcare. I was making about $22 an hour. However, my rent was like $1,400 a month, car note, new baby, all the way on my own. There was no cushion and there was no money for childcare at all. And so I would have various friends or family members or just people watch my son, and you know, I couldn't pay them and it was very inconsistent. And I was always afraid I would lose my job because I didn't have a place to take my then 1.5-year-old son.
Rochelle searched for a childcare center she could afford.
I was able to get him into a childcare center, which was really close to my job because he was still nursing at the time. And I could go at lunch break and I could go on my breaks because it was literally like 5 minutes down the street. It was a very reputable place. And it was $1,200 a month. That was like one paycheck. And there was just no way I could afford that.
So Rochelle applied for subsidized childcare and filled out the forms.
I understated my income so that I could receive free childcare. And ended up getting convicted of grand theft.
She was charged with theft of the 6 months of childcare costs, which were about $6,000. The agency and the judge had a lot of discretionary power over the sentence, to go hard or to simply require a repayment plan.
They just decided to just throw the whole book at me, even talking about 10 years in jail. And my lawyer at the time said, I never saw this before. Like, I've never seen it go that hard before, like how they're doing to you. He was like, usually it's not even a misdemeanor. It's usually like called welfare fraud, not even grand theft. This was a criminal lawyer who specializes in child welfare cases. He said, I've seen people who have two incomes making way more money than you, have done it for way longer, finally get caught and get you pay it back and a slap on the wrist and no record.
Her lawyer also pointed to racism.
The next time I had a court date, my lawyer said, I'm not even bringing you in to the courtroom. I'm going to talk for you. He was just like, I don't want them to look at you because they see you as this welfare criminal trying to just drain the system, they're judging you because of what you look like, you know, because you're an African-American and that's the story that they're told about you, your people. That's what you do. You steal. And so I'm not even going to let you go in the courtroom and answer any questions. I'm going to talk on your behalf.
And he did. But Rochelle's grand theft charge stuck, and she was convicted.
I was desperate, and I made a very bad judgment call to do it. If I had to do it all over again, I would have done something different, but I can't tell you to this day what I would have done different.
Rochelle paid the child care money back, but the spiral had started.
I lost my job because, of course, I work in the what they call vulnerable populations, child care, social work, foster care agencies, working with aging populations. It's all under one umbrella, and that umbrella is community care licensing. And so you mess with one, you messed with the whole thing. So my job was not able to keep me because community care licensing and Department of Justice would not let my fingerprints clear to work. I was unable to work in my field for 4 years and had a misdemeanor on my record. I lost everything from that mistake. And, you know, it was 7 years ago, but I'm still paying for that same mistake. I didn't know how hard it was going to be to get back to work. I was very naive about that. I've been working for 20 years at this point. I was 38 years old. You know, I'm like, I have a solid work history. There's no way I'm not going to walk into some place and get a job. I'm not a criminal. I'm not a thief. I'm a hard worker. I just thought I'm going to snap back to this, you know, and it was 4 years before I was even eligible to even go back into my field. And, you know, luckily I got a job with Uber as a driver because they weren't doing background checks.
But Rochelle's informal jobs weren't enough to pay the rent. She didn't want an eviction record, so she gave up her apartment and was couch surfing. She couldn't afford storage, so she lost most of her stuff.
Family and friends were like, oh, we can keep a little bit of this in our garage or, you know, certain things that I wanted to keep. But, you know, the bedroom set you worked hard for, your TVs, you know, your kids' clothes. Whatever I couldn't really carry with me, I had to give it away. My dressers, stuff people, family members had given to me. I had to just give it all away. That was a really, really hard. That's when I really felt it, like, I really have nothing. I have nothing.
So Rochelle and her son had nowhere to stay.
We lived in a homeless shelter in San Francisco, and we were homeless for about 2.5 years and at some point living in our car and couch surfing, living in different shelters until we got to one shelter where we were able to stay for a longer period of time, which was a year. Some shelters you can only stay in for a few months. Some you can only stay for nights. So it was really, really difficult for my son and I. But also, he's very resilient, and so was I.
There's a bitterly ironic twist to Rochelle's story.
The craziest thing is, when I became homeless, the first thing they offered me was free childcare. That's so ironic. They were like, well, you know, now that you're homeless in San Francisco, you can have childcare, free childcare until your son is 5 years old. I couldn't even work. Nobody would hire me because the conviction was too new. I said, wow, I can have free childcare because I'm homeless without a job. to look for a job where no one's going to hire me. But when I'm working and I'm paying into the system, I can't access this.
The challenges for Rochelle Pierre and thousands of homeless people in San Francisco go beyond the lack of affordable housing. There's not affordable health care, including drug treatment and mental health. And without affordable child care or livable wages, it's very hard to get by. Nonprofit groups try to help. The Hamilton Families Agency serves homeless families, and Rochelle was able to get into their rent support program.
They pay a portion of your rent. So while you're trying to get to a place where you can afford to pay your own rent, this program is there to support you in your own apartment. They help you to find a place that they feel like after maybe 1 year, you will be able to pay on your own. They pay 60%, you pay 40%. And as your income goes up, you contribute more until that one day when you're actually able to pay the full rent. And that's when you make twice the rent. So if your rent is $1,400, you need to be making what, $2,800 a month. Then they say, okay, we're going to successfully close your case.
But the nonprofit agencies have the same problem as their clients. That's finding affordable housing without displacing them far from San Francisco.
So San Francisco doesn't have any affordable housing. I'm a San Francisco native, born and raised in San Francisco. All my education is in San Francisco. Most of my work experience was in San Francisco. It's the city I love. For me, there was no place in San Francisco. There was no place in Oakland at that time. And so Antioch was the option. You know, Antioch is a suburb that was created for the white middle class. It wasn't created for low income people of color. And so when we came out here in droves because we couldn't afford San Francisco and Oakland and it was more affordable, the rents were a little bit lower, but it was a desert as far as resources.
Antioch is 52 miles away from Rochelle's job. Her commute, with traffic, can often take 2 hours each way.
It was going to be a really truck to just get back and forth. And when I saw the house, of course, I was thankful that I wasn't going to be in a shelter anymore. But I just immediately thought about, how am I going to get back and forth to work? And if something happens to my car, or if I can't afford the BART payments, I'm not going to be able to maintain my job living so far out here. And so it was a blessing because you're not homeless anymore, but it was definitely a challenge because the resources out here are very scarce, and not knowing anyone, not having a support system, not even a friend out here really, was really hard.
While Rochelle was coping with living way out in Antioch, she found some activities for Jaden.
I learned about the East County Regional Group, and they were doing a lot of free activities for children under five, and my son was under five at that time. So, you know, he was able to do some baseball, and we were able to do Zumba in the park, and just a couple of little fun recreational things that I wouldn't have been able to afford on my own. And, you know, they said, why don't you join the group? So I, you know, of course, signed up and been working with them since 2017. So that's kind of where I found my support group out here. I met a lot of other families that were going through the same struggle as me and who wanted to make a difference, who didn't want to just stay there and wanted to see the community change.
You may not have thought someone with a master's degree and a solid work history could be homeless, but the lack of affordable childcare options, a desperate mistake with a harsh punishment, has trapped Rochelle with insecure housing.
They always say you're one paycheck away. It's so cliche, but it's so real. You are one paycheck away from being homeless. You lose your job. You don't get a job quick enough. You either need to tell your landlord, I need to move out, where you have nowhere to go to but a homeless shelter, and some of them are full, okay? Or you get an eviction. And either way, you become homeless. And it's because of the wages. It's because you don't have, even most people don't have a savings where you can say, oh, I have a few months saved up. You know, there are people, many people who do, but there are far more people who do not.
I asked Rochelle where she's at now.
I am still poor. I don't know where I'm going to get the money from. And, you know, still I try, because it's like I'm trying to invest in my future so that I'm not stuck here, because I do have a son and he is my legacy. And I don't want him to be worried about we're going to be homeless again. And I often go to bed when I look at the bills I have versus the income, and I think I promised him that we wouldn't do that again. But I just don't know if I can keep that promise. And it's hard. It's devastating. It has me depressed often and very worried all the time. And just living in fear, working two jobs now and taking care of my child. And I'm still in the same situation. And it's almost like, it feels like a life sentence.
That story aired in 2022. It's from the series Families Finding Home. It was produced by Lisa Rudman with support from the Bay Area Video Coalition and Hamilton Families and Google. You can find links to the whole series at our website, klw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. As we just heard, part of Rochelle's struggle with homelessness included stays at places that provide supportive housing. Here in the Bay Area, that sometimes takes the form of SROs, or single-room occupancy hotels. They're the residential hotels you see mostly in neighborhoods like the Tenderloin and Soma and in downtown Oakland. To learn more about life inside these homes, we're revisiting our profile of Kevin Watkins, who back in 2016 was a resident at the Star Hotel in San Francisco's Mission neighborhood.
My name is Kevin Watkins. I live in the Mission at the Star Hotel. And the one thing I would like people to know about me is that if they only handed me $1, everything would be A-OK. I was closeted homosexual and had been in the closet my whole life, to thoughts, to deeds, everything. Really wanted to be a straight person very badly. Wanted to be normal, just wanted to be a regular person. I was fortunate I kind of fell into the computer field when I was a young man, and I started out in operations and went into programming and went into system controls, and was just really lucky to be, you know, on the street at the time when people were going from mainframes to PCs. So I was very lucky, and I'd gotten laid off twice in a two-year period, and I could kind of see the writing on the wall. I had no formal education. I had a GED, that's what I had. So I decided that I would take this opportunity to go to college. I studied education, I got a teaching degree, and so I ended up going to a church's school. You know, I loved it, I was very good at it, I totally loved it, I loved doing it, but I was in the closet. And someone came to me one day and they said, that this particular student had committed suicide. I knew why he had done it without them even telling me, because he was gay and his parents were bullying him. I felt that that boy would not have killed himself if he had known he had a gay teacher, and a good teacher, and a teacher that liked him and that was smart. So I was asked to speak at the funeral, and I decided to come out of the closet at the funeral, and I was never allowed to return to the classroom. I became homeless. Well, I gave it 2 years on the street, still looking for work. I couldn't teach for the state, so I was really limited in the sort of parochial type schools that I could apply to. I only did that for about a year. Eventually you get to the point where you look like you're homeless. You smell like you're homeless. And so I gave up. I gave it another year on the streets, and then I attempted suicide. And through a series of short-term programs and slightly longer-term programs, I ended up here.
That 2016 piece was produced by Colin Peden as part of a partnership with San Francisco's Department of Supportive Housing. Find all our reporting on homelessness at klw.org/crosscurrents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Hussein Khan, Aru Nair, Julia Haney, Nigar Ajayabi, James Rowlands, Ganadijo Johnson, Victor Tense, Shireen Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.